True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Line and Kugels, about whom we'll talk more about later when we get to the Week 20 pitching and hitting planners. I'm Chris Towers. That's Scott White. It is a Kokomo Friday. It is the last episode until Frank comes back and I can get a full night of sleep. So I'm looking forward to that. On today's episode, you know, kind of weird night of baseball. Scott and I were talking about this before the show, and there were only really three pitchers on the schedule, I think you can say three. Yeah, three pitchers on the schedule who, in the recent past at least, have been legitimate must-start pitchers. I guess you might be able to make a case for a couple of other ones at some point this season, but who were legitimately viewed as really, really good, reliable, must-start fantasy pitchers. All three of them pitched today. All three of them pitched poorly today, and that has been in keeping with a theme. That has been Aaron Nola, Framber Valdez, and Sonny Gray. And so we're going to start off the show.
It was the same one.
Same three, yeah. I mean,
we never actually named them to each other.
It wasn't Daniel Lynch, although he did actually have a somewhat interesting start.
Well,
today.
I was just wondering, like, Joe Ross, maybe Rich Hill, maybe Dallas Keuchel. But yeah, I mean, those not as high end as the three you just named in the recent past.
Yeah, and so what we usually do is we start off with, oh my goodness gracious, and do some news, and you know, we'll get to all that. But what I want to do, I was having a lot of trouble. Usually what I've been doing this week is kind of breaking all the pitchers down into the good pitchers, the maybe good pitchers, and the bad pitchers. And the bad pitchers, you know, we don't spend a lot of time talking about. You know, we don't really need to know that Tyler Anderson gave up two runs to the Yankees today. That doesn't really matter. So it's those first two groups, and I'm just trying to figure out whether those three belong among the good pitchers with a period, perhaps an exclamation point, or do they belong among the good pitchers with a question mark? And that is Aaron Nola, who gave up five earned runs, five hits, three walks, seven strikeouts to the Washington Nationals. A bad Washington Nationals lineup, mind you. Framber Valdez, who actually pitched deep into the game, 6 2/3, gave up six hits, four earned runs, three walks, seven strikeouts. And then Sonny Gray, who only went five innings, six hits, four earned runs allowed. All three of these pitchers have really been struggling quite a bit lately. And so I'm wondering, and maybe we'll define it like this. To belong among the good pitchers, these three, I would say, would probably have to be, let's call them top 40 pitchers. Are Aaron Nola, Framber Valdez, and Sonny Gray top 40 pitchers for you right now?
Well, I think one firmly is.
Yes, Aaron Nola.
I think one barely is.
I don't know which one. Is not. I don't know which one is barely.
So, I'm going to say Framber Valdez barely is.
Okay. What is, well, let's start with Aaron Nola, who had another poor results start. Obviously, the three walks and five innings, that's not what you want to see. Velocity and spin rate were actually up in this start. That hasn't been an issue. Only nine whiffs. He gave up two hard hit balls, and he had an 80.7 mile per hour average exit velocity against.
That's tiny.
I mean, that's really good quality of contact suppression there.
Yeah.
What's wrong with Aaron Nola? And is the answer probably nothing?
Yes. I think for most of the stretches this year where he struggled, most of what's responsible for him having an ERA over four, the problem was too many home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Too many fly balls, too many home runs. That clearly wasn't the problem in this one. He only gave up one home run. He allowed not very hard contact at all. A lot of soft contact. His problem certainly hasn't been missing bats this season. That's been
fine.
About what... Yeah, it's been... Aaron Nola has been as good at this year as ever. So he's talked about it too. He's had trouble keeping his pitches down in the zone. And that's something that's come up previously in his career. Remember when they had Chris Young as their pitching coach in 2019, he and Aaron Nola kind of clashed over that because Young wanted him pitching up in the zone more. That's kind of a modern approach to how you use a fastball, but not every pitcher's fastball is really optimized for that. And Nola didn't feel like his was. He was more comfortable pitching down in the zone. And then Chris Young was gone last year, and we saw Nola have a nice bounce back season. So he seems to think it's a key to his success, keeping the ball down. The home run output against him this year would seem to suggest it's a key to his success. And in his last three starts, he's done a better job of it. It's just that this one, I think this one was mostly bad luck.
Yeah,
two starts were good.
And really, one bad pitch. He gave up a three-run home run to Josh Bell. He was pitching pretty well before that. I think that was in that fifth inning, and that kind of became his last inning as a result. Yeah, it was the bottom of the fifth. He gave up a home run to Josh Bell, and I want to see how... Yeah, I mean, it was a shot. 413 feet, 109.6 mile per hour. It was not a cheapie. But, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people concerned about Aaron Nola right now. I don't think you should be. You know, you look at... We talked about this earlier, I think, on Tuesday when you said he was one of the players you would want to trade for. And that 2019 season is the comp that we would think of for what is happening right now. It's his worst ERA since 2016 before this season. He's up to 449 now. He was at 387 before in 2019. The difference is, one, he had his highest walk rate by far in 2019. It was a 9.4% walk rate. Hello. My cat, David Bowie, for those of you who are watching, is hanging out on my desk, as always, when I don't kick her out. He had 3.87 ERA, but that was with a 4.26 xERA, a 4.03 FIP, a 3.82 xFIP, a 3.87 Sierra. Basically, it was the... Sorry, 4.14 Sierra. It was the worst season of his career. He just didn't pitch well by his standards in 2019. This season... Yeah, he's got a 4.49 ERA, but he actually has the lowest walk rate of his career. He has the second highest strikeout rate of his career. He's got a 3.64 xERA coming into today's start. I would imagine that actually went down based on how little hard contact he gave up. And he's got a 3.55 FIP and a 3.47 xFIP, which are right around where he's been for most of his career. So...
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like Aaron Nola should be pitching poorly. Like 2019, it was hard to figure out what had gone wrong, but also he earned that ERA. This season, it's not necessarily clear. Yes, he is giving up more fly balls. His average launch angle has gone from 9.2 degrees to 13.1 over the last three seasons. It was 8.6 last season. So, you know, that's part of it, but it doesn't seem like he's earned his poor production so far, is the way I would put it.
basically since then it's been Aaron Nola, and I would not be surprised at all if from today forward, like, he goes on a run where he's from today forward the best pitcher in baseball.
We've seen those stretches from him.
Yeah, we've seen those stretches before from him, and obviously that's, you know, only one pitcher can be the best pitcher in baseball from today forward, so the odds are against it being him. But I'm saying I think he's still capable of having that kind of run.
All right, so Aaron Nola, definitively still good. Is he a top 20 starting pitcher for you still?
Yep.
He is for me as well. Now, Framber Valdez, you said he's just barely a top 40 starting pitcher. And, you know, I get that. He got off to a really good start that really made it seem like his 2020, you know, in the small sample size, it wasn't just that he, you know, was backing it up. He was pitching even better. He was still getting elite ground balls, but he was getting more strikeouts than he had last season. Since July 1st, Framber Valdez has been kind of a mess. Now, let me see. It's 4 earned runs today and 6 2/3. So that raised his ERA a little bit. It was already above 4 over the previous 6 starts. So I would guess it's in the 4-2 range. Let me just add that up while I'm filibustering here. All right, I got it. 4.75. That's not right. I did the math wrong somewhere.
It's above 4. It's between 4 and 5. I think that over a short stretch.
But it's not. Well, it's 7 starts now, and that is a short stretch. But the stretch of Framber Valdez being a very good pitcher is 17 starts. You know, 11 last season, 10 starts last year, plus 1 relief appearance, 6 to start this season. So, you know, 7 is smaller than 16.
I think it's just a 6-start stretch, Chris, where he hasn't been good.
Well, I'm counting the July 1st start because that was when his control problem started. He only gave up 2 earned runs in that one, but
yeah,
that's the key for him. 2 earned runs in
7, but he walked 5. Gotcha.
He has, after today, he has 27 walks in his last 40 innings pitched. So, you know, obviously, it is a small sample size, but the thing with Framber Valdez was his control was really, really bad his first 2 seasons in the majors, 2018 and 2019. Then he posted much better walk rate last season to, 2.0 per 9, you know, more than nearly a third what it was in 2019. And now it's back up to 4.1 for the season entering today. It's going to be higher than that after today's start. I just wonder if he just pitched over his head for a little while and he's falling back on bad habits. Now, he has still been in my top 40, and I'm looking around and, like, I can definitely move him down and I can definitely move other guys who are above him ahead of him. But there are also some guys in the 35 to 40 range who I actually do need to move down. So I'm looking at it and I'm thinking 38, 39 maybe is what I'm thinking.
I mean, it's certainly possible that he just had a stretch of 3 months between this year and last where he kept finding the strike zone in a way he never did before. And that'll never happen again. That's a plausible scenario. He is so good at the one thing he's so good at.
Yes.
Inducing ground balls. His ground ball rate was by far the best in the majors last year. And it's like 10 percentage points higher this year. It is otherworldly how he puts the ball on the ground. So, you know, he
70.1% right now.
He doesn't need to be an amazing control pitcher. He can be a baddish control pitcher and still be a good fantasy pitcher. He needs to be a better control pitcher than he's been here since the start of July. Yeah. But, you know, that's pitchers can go through stretches where they have worse control and then go through stretches where they have better control. I think the main thing I would say about Framber Valdez, you know, to in support of him, is that he hasn't, you know, we're talking about how bad this stretch is. It's bad, and yet he has an ERA below five during it. You know, it's not like he has an ERA of eight during this stretch. He's getting shellacked. In fact, there hasn't been a single start during the stretch in which Framber Valdez has scored negative fantasy points. He's been a positive contributor every time. So in a points league, I don't even know that you have much incentive to bench him. In categories league, he's certainly hurting your whips, hurting your ERA a little bit. But, you know, I think this is what bad Framber Valdez looks like. If you have any hope that he can rebound and be the better version of himself, then you can withstand this. I think this is okay.
It's a 4.28 ERA over the last seven starts since July 1st, just to clarify. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, if he can, his season walks per nine now is 4.14%. It's 4.1 per nine, 10.7%. In 2019 and 2018, he was above 13%. I think that's where it starts to get into the danger zone. Because, yes, he keeps the ball on the ground. He's not going to give up home runs. But, you know, you're also, your BABIP is going to be higher when you give up a lot of ground balls. And so far, it's been 274, so that hasn't hurt him yet. You know, that's somewhere that, like, you know, if the whip is in the 1.35 range, 1.35 to 1.4, which it's been higher than that over the last seven starts, that's where you get in trouble, I think. So I agree, probably still in the top 40, but definitely more Marcus Stroman than peak Dallas Keuchel, like he might have looked like at one point. And Marcus Stroman's still very good. Sonny Gray, not a top 40 starting pitcher for you. And I think that's interesting, but I don't necessarily disagree. He gave up 4 earned runs in 5 innings on 6 hits, 2 walks. Velocity and spin rate both way down for him. I guess velocity wasn't quite as, you know, relatively speaking, it was like 1 mile per hour, maybe 1.5 today. Spin rates have been consistently down, you know, 200. And we're at the point where you're talking about probably half his starts have come, or maybe a third of his starts have come since the sticky substance ban. So the fact that they're still several hundred RPMs below his season average tells you that they're still very, very low, relatively speaking. 6.09 ERA, 38 strikeouts, 11 walks in 31 innings over the last six starts since coming back from the IL for Sonny Gray. Do you just not believe he can turn it around?
I mean, Sonny Gray... That
you were down on him coming into the season.
That history is fraught. Because there's probably been going into three seasons. I've been probably three seasons over the course of how long has he been around? He's been around at least a decade, right? Probably for three of those seasons, we went into this year and I was exceptionally high on him, including last season.
Yep.
And every time he's disappointed. And look, he's a good ground ball pitcher. He's a pretty good bat misser. But he's just never seems to bring it all together for very long. I mean, you look at his game log.
He did have a 2.88 ERA in 2019. We should point that out. He was a Cy Young contender that year. He was great.
But he never sustains it from year to year, which is why he keeps...
Sure, you know, yes.
Which is why it keeps letting me down. And yeah, since his first handful of starts last year, he's just been mediocre. I'm surprised his xFIP is as low as it is. His xFIP, because his ERA is over 4. His xFIP is 3.26. His ERA is 4.44. So xFIP is more than a point lower than his ERA. That's a really low xFIP. And normally, you know, I trust the xFIP over the ERA. But in his case, with his history...
Well, the thing
and the fact he's not really providing innings, and the fact his whip is crazy high in addition to the ERA.
The thing is, he is someone who, in my mental picture of Sonny Gray, is lots of strikeouts, iffy command, gets hit hard. His xERA is 3.67, which takes into account how hard the ball is hit. His average exit velocity is actually in the 87th percentile. His hard hit rate allowed is in the 89th percentile. He's actually been really good at suppressing hard contact, and that's been the case the last couple of years. So That's the thing that I'm struggling with is, like, I could see him being someone who gets a lot of strikeouts but just doesn't pitch all that well in, like, a, I don't know, the way, like, Michael Pineda has been for most of his career, where it's just like we it seems like he should be better, but he just gets hit so hard that it doesn't work out. That hasn't been the case for Sonny Gray. He's just been inconsistent, and I don't know what exactly to make of that. I do still have him inside of my top 40, but I have dropped him, and he's right in the top 40. He's right around Framber Valdez.
And I'm not, you know, top 40 is a high bar to meet. He's,
yes,
you know, probably the top 60 are rostered everywhere, the top 60 starting pitchers.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's in my top 60.
So he has to be.
I'm not saying he's junk or anything. I just treat him, I guess, as a matchups type because, mm-hmm. you know, he isn't consistent enough. And he is, if you've started him every turn, he's hurt your ERA and WHIP in a pretty significant way.
But tonight, you know, was against the Pirates.
Yeah. So, very difficult to trust.
Yeah.
But I think maybe the difference between him and Framber Valdez, because they both have control issues, they both have they're both really good ground ball pitchers.
Framber
Gray gets more strikeouts, but as a trade-off, maybe he has a hard time going six innings.
Yes.
And I feel like pitchers who don't go six innings that often, unless their ratios are just amazing, is really hard for them to be impact pitchers in fantasy. And Framber Valdez is one of the best at going six innings consistently.
Yes.
So that I think that might be the reason I like Framber Valdez more, even though
that makes sense.
You look at the ratios and you might come away a little more impressed with Gray.
That makes sense. I mean, he's still, I think Framber's actually just below six innings per start over his last seven, but that's, again, a very bad stretch for him in terms of his walks. All right, let's move on to some of the other stuff we've got on the show. Again, we've got a week 20 pitching and hitter planners is going to be very important because some playoffs are starting. Although I feel like I might be in the one league I'm in where the playoffs start this week. I think that might be an Adam Azer, we're going to end the season before the football season starts special. I think that's why we start so early, because
yeah, none of mine started that early.
Yeah, probably at least two or three weeks away from most playoffs. But still, you're trying to make the playoffs, even if your playoffs haven't started. So it's very important. We'll get to that shortly. But let's get to some of the news from Thursday. And the big news, Juan Soto is dealing with knee pain. He left after he felt it while running the bases in the ninth inning, and he will be evaluated Friday. No reason right now to think that this is a serious injury. We'll know more on Friday, obviously, and we'll, you know, have that for you on Monday's episode of the podcast. But it's certainly not what you want to see. So hopefully Juan Soto's okay. Some of the other
they said they're not going to push him. I don't know if that's the exact quote, but that was,
yeah, that seems likely.
Obviously with them out of it, you know, he might go on the IL just for the sake of rest.
Sure.
So keep that in mind.
All right, some of the other news. Clayton Kershaw is hoping to return, quote, sometime in September. So, I don't know, man. He may not be able to contribute for you. In a head-to-head points league, you know, if you're desperate with those shallower rosters and there's a difference maker potentially on waivers, like if you need to win three games to make the playoffs, I think you could consider dropping Clayton Kershaw. Because he's definitely not going to help you in those 3 weeks.
I think there's probably a scenario where you might have to drop him, but I would look to avoid it.
Oh, certainly.
As much as I possibly could. If you hope to win the title, you're going to have a much better chance if Kershaw is back for you, and he can't make it back for you if he's not on your roster. Yep.
Luis Robert will not return from his rehab assignment this weekend. A decision will be made on Sunday. So my read of that is, as long as he makes it through this weekend at AAA, okay, he will be back on Monday. Eloy Jimenez will play the outfield Friday, so fingers crossed. It's always an adventure out there. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Gary Sanchez was placed on the COVID IL. Josh Donaldson was back in the lineup Thursday after missing, I think it was about a week, give or take a couple of pinch hitting appearances with a hamstring injury. Nick Castellanos was activated from the IL as expected. Went 0-for-3 with 2 strikeouts and a walk, but it's good to see him back.
I'm interested in seeing how this goes.
Yeah.
Considering microfracture in his wrist.
Yeah, microfracture in his wrist, no rehab assignment. We'll see. You know, hopefully it's not the kind of thing that just lingers and saps him of his, you know, grip strength or whatever, which would, I guess, be the function that would cause it to limit him. Jared Walsh is likely to be activated soon. He's coming back from an intercostal strain. Luis Severino will make his second rehab start on Sunday. Brandon Belt returned from the IL as expected, went 1-for-3 with an RBI while batting 7th before being replaced late in the game. Francisco Lindor is starting to hit off a tee. He's been taking grounders and running around. That is a good sign as he returns from this oblique injury and, you know, maybe makes you think he could only be 2 weeks out, which would be much better than we feared. And, you know, I do remember Lindor having that calf injury before the 2019 season. I believe it was 2019. And we thought he was going to miss a month, maybe more. And he ended up coming back after a couple of weeks and showed no ill effects from it. So, I don't know. He might just be good at healing. Maybe he's a a superhero. Travis d'Arnaud caught Ian Anderson's rehab start Thursday. So, there's two pieces of news in one. Ian Anderson made his first rehab start Thursday. And will catch Wascari Noah. So, there's a third piece of news that Wascari Noah will make a rehab start on Friday. And then Travis d'Arnaud will pinch hit on or DH on Sunday. So, I would think that means Travis d'Arnaud is probably going to be back next week. Is he a top 12 catcher when healthy?
I wanted to say top 12. Obviously, not an extended track record. He was great last year during the short season. He was pretty good in 2019.
After he got traded to the Braves, especially.
The
Rays.
2020 was his first year with the Braves.
It was when he got traded to the Rays, sorry.
Okay. You know, didn't get off to a good start this year before getting hurt. I would say he's a top 15 catcher, but I could probably come up with 12 names I'd rather have than d'Arnaud.
Okay. Sorry, I was just taking a quick note there. Sorry for the pause. Andrew Benintendi was out of the lineup. Again, that's 2 games in a row. He's missed with that shoulder injury. I don't know. Hopefully he's not placed on the IL, but, you know, if he's missing multiple games, it looked pretty bad on Tuesday. You know, we'll see. Nico Horner played catch, did some running drills. He's coming back from that oblique injury, so still a ways to go there. We'll see when he starts swinging a bat. Evan Longoria began his rehab assignment at AAA on Thursday. He's been out since June. Hopefully he'll be back relatively soon. Robbie Grossman left the game after getting hit by a pitch on the left elbow. Just seems to be a contusion. The Red Sox acquired Delino DeShields Jr., sent him to AAA. Kevin Gausman was placed on paternity leave. Doesn't seem like it's going to cost him a start. He pitched on Wednesday, so, you know, that's good. Justice Sheffield will begin his rehab assignment Friday. Justin Dunn is, quote, falling behind in his recovery from a shoulder injury, so that's not good news. He's behind schedule. I don't know if it was a setback or what, but probably won't see him back this season at this point, I would guess. Yuli Gurriel missed his third straight game with that neck stiffness. TJ Antone will begin a rehab assignment soon. Wandy Peralta will start for the Yankees on Friday. That will be his first start in his major league career. We're going to guess it's a bullpen game. And Trevor Bauer's administrative leave was extended to August 13th. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the Week 20 hitting and pitching planners presented by Leinenkugel's.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And we're back for the Week 20 Pitcher and Hitter Planners presented by Leinenkugel's. Let's start off with some 2-start pitchers. Scott, you sent me your list that'll be out on Friday on cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. And, you know, you made a couple of tiers. I'm assuming the tier that starts with Eduardo Rodriguez is the, like, 2-start streamers tier. Is that correct?
It's kind of the points league only.
Okay.
tier of two start pitchers.
Everyone above him is pretty much rostered everywhere, except for Jameson Taillon, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see everyone above in the tier above him. Actually, Jameson Taillon is beyond the threshold of being recommended as a sleeper. He's been picked up in too many leagues now. But John Gray is 78% rostered. He's the least rostered of that second tier. He has two road starts. The matchups aren't great at Houston, at San Francisco, but he hasn't had a bad start since returning from the IL.
Yeah.
And sliders looked really good. It's been one of the best stretches of his career, honestly. So in shallow leagues, I would call John Gray a sleeper. Maybe some of you out there who play somewhere other than CBS, if you play for Yahoo or ESPN, Gray is much more available than just the 22% of leagues where he's at CBS. But in any case.
And then Carlos Carrasco. Probably going to give you six innings in a week for the first time this season, because he's got two starts versus Washington versus Dodgers. One really good matchup, one really tough one.
Yep. I would recommend him in most leagues. Yep.
It makes me a little nervous in a roto league, but yeah, I think you'd probably do it. That Dodgers start could really blow up his ratios, but I think I would probably do it. You and I disagreed on Casey Mize on yesterday's podcast. I'm much lower on him than you are, but he's at Baltimore versus Cleveland. I think you probably start him there. Those are I think he's going to struggle at some point, but he'll probably keep pitching pretty well against those two.
Yeah, I would think so. And I would put him a tier lower if both of those matchups weren't what they were. I wouldn't have him as I call this second tier sleepers and questionables. And I have Casey Mize in there. You know, but basically in most leagues you're probably starting him just like you are Carrasco, just like you are John Gray. It's really the next tier where the guys tend to be more available, but there's a reason they're available, and probably they should stay available in leagues where you're looking to preserve ERA and WHIP. But if you're just looking for volume,
Eduardo Rodriguez versus Tampa and versus Baltimore, those are I would start him in a roto or a points league, actually.
He's actually not that available for what it's worth.
Hello.
Can't get away with calling him a sleeper.
Luis Patino at Boston, at Minneapolis. Yeah.
Minneapolis.
Minnesota. I always do that. Because the state and the city sound too similar. They got the same... Get out of here, cat. They got the same name. So I always get confused. I'm not sure on him. Ross Stripling versus the Angels and versus the Mariners. I think that one's pretty interesting. He did have a good start today, 16 whiffs on 98 pitches, six strikeouts, one walk, no earned runs in six innings. Was against Cleveland, so obviously caveats apply, but he's got the Mariners next week, and caveats also apply against the Mariners. So
I mean, he could throw a no-hitter.
He could. Anytime you got the Mariners, Rangers, or Cleveland.
So Stripling... abnormally good start here on Thursday with the 16 whiffs, especially. Mm-hmm. 8 came on the changeup. Normally think of his slider as his big swing and miss pitch whenever he does get swings and misses. So that was interesting to see that 8 came on the changeup. Three good starts in a row now, and actually a 3.39 ERA in his past 13 appearances. One of them wasn't a start, but a 3.39 ERA in his last 13.
It's pretty good, Scott.
That is a lengthy stretch of success there for Stripling. I still find him really hard to buy into. Now, basically, that stretch does coincide with him correcting a pitch tipping issue. But I really just don't trust the profile, because there's not a lot backing up the success except for the success itself. But I could call him a sleeper.
We call that a tautology, Scott.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
It's just a fancy word, I know. It's a 10-cent word.
You know a lot of fancy words, so I would not second guess you on that.
I've been skeptical of Zach Thompson. We talked about him yesterday as someone who doesn't really need to be rostered, but at San Diego versus Chicago Cubs, he is an RP eligible pitcher. I think in a points league you could probably roll with him. Not in a roto league. He's not getting the strikeouts he was early, but You know, if he can just make it through that San Diego start, you know, if he gets 8 points against San Diego, I think he's going to be a really nice starter for you next week.
Yeah, because of that Cubs start. And it might be a reason to hold on to him for one more week. I can tell you, I'm not starting Zach Thompson in any league myself. And it's worth reminding every now and then that when you have to come up with a certain number of sleeper pitchers rostered below a certain threshold, they're not all going to be good. Yeah. And so I hope you're not in a position where you have to look for sleeper pitchers. And generally speaking, I'm not.
You know, I will say this. We always complain when it's like, oh, how can Patrick Sandoval still be so widely available? Why aren't you guys adding Joey Votto? They're doing you a favor, Scott.
I know.
They're making your job easier. Show some gratitude.
But the thing is, those players like that end up standing out so much that they are just a fixture at the top of the sleeper list.
Exactly.
It just leads to repetitiveness.
It writes itself, baby.
That's why it gets frustrating. No, I mean, John Gray, who's 78% roster, as we mentioned, that is a full-throated endorsement. Like, John Gray, pick him up everywhere and start him for the two starts this week. But the other names we've gone over here, Patino, Stripling, Zach Thompson, and I'll go with
Adrian Houser,
who's in my top 10 sleeper pitchers, Adrian Houser. At Chicago, at Pittsburgh, great matchups. You'll be lucky if he goes five innings in both of them. He's pretty good at preventing runs because he's a good ground ball pitcher, but the whip's going to be high. I could see how if you're in a pinch looking to fill a pitcher spot this week and having to resort to the waiver wire, Adrian Houser might be one of your best choices. But that doesn't mean he's a good choice, you know? It's just the best of bad options.
All right, let's move on to some of those sleeper pitchers. This is about half two-start guys, but some very interesting one-start pitchers as well. Starts with John Gray at Houston at San Francisco, Joe Ross at the Mets, Logan Webb versus Colorado. So that is at home, not on the road. That's, you know, I don't think you'd be endorsing him at Coors Field, probably. Patino at Boston, at Minnesota. Did I get it right that time?
Yes.
I get it wrong with the Vikings too, the Timberwolves. I can't.
Well, I got to figure Indianapolis and Indiana must, because they're actually teams that go by both of those.
Yes.
Indiana Pacers, Indianapolis Colts. Man.
Oh, man, they do go different. None of the ones in Minnesota go by Minneapolis.
No.
Man.
Of course not.
That's fun. Seems like something I should know. And yet.
Do you realize the offense that would be to all the St. Paulites out there?
Oh, that's a good point.
Them Minneapolis.
It would be weird if they were the Minneapolis Twins. That's a good point. I hadn't considered that one.
Those St. Paulites. Is that what they'd be? St. Paulites? St. Paulians? St. Paulites sounds right. Gotta say.
I don't know. Saints. St. Paul Saints. That's where they go. Ross Stripling versus the Angels at the Mariners. Cole Irvin at Texas. Johnny Cueto at home versus Colorado. Zach Thompson at San Diego versus Chicago Cubs. Adrian Houser at the Cubs at Pittsburgh. And Tarek Skubal at Baltimore. Those are your 10 sleeper pitchers for week 20. It's 10 sleeper hitters. Harrison Bader's the top one. Tyler O'Neill. So I'm going to go ahead and guess the Cardinals have pretty good matchups. At Pittsburgh, at Casey.
Yeah, they're among the five best hitter matchups this week are the Cardinals.
And then...
Can you read those off?
Well, and then we've got Colton Wong, Rowdy Tellez, Lorenzo Cain.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to guess the Brewers have pretty good matchups too.
The Brewers have the single best matchup of any team this week. In fact, the Brewers are one of just, let me count them up here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One of just seven teams playing seven games this week.
And they've got at the Cubs and at Pittsburgh.
It just so happens that most of those teams playing seven games have some tough pitchers on the schedule, but the Brewers do not. They're going against the Cubs. They're going against the Pirates in those seven games. And Colton Wong batting nearly 300 this year. Rowdy Tellez has been on a nice little power surge recently. Cooled off a little. Very recently, but only one of the seven pitchers on the schedule is a left-hander.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, and then Lorenzo Cain's been hot since coming back from the IL.
Yes, he has.
So I like all three of those guys this week. The White Sox have good matchups, so I have Andrew Vaughn and Cesar Hernandez on here. The Red Sox, Enrique Hernandez is still hot. I would stick with him for another week. And maybe kind of the biggest gamble on this list is Mike Moustakas, who apparently is about to be activated for the Reds. So we'll get a chance to see him over the weekend. If Mike Moustakas looks pretty good, then I think you'll want to activate him right away for week 20. The Reds aren't among the teams with the five teams with the best matchups, but their matchups are still pretty good. They got a 7-game week. They're going against the Cleveland for one game, Detroit for three, and Texas for three. Yeah, that does sound pretty good. No, not Texas. I'm sorry, Philadelphia. Yeah, sorry. I saw Ranger Suarez and I thought Texas, but no.
All right, and then I'll just point out Andrew Vaughn has obviously been disappointing this season, but he was really hot right before the All-Star break. Came back from the All-Star break, had one hit in his first five games. That's not what you want to see. But in 12 games since then, sorry, 13 games, he started 12 of the last 14 for the White Sox. So he's pretty much an everyday player. He is hitting .405 with a 1.111 OPS. That was four ones. So there's a period in there as well. Only two home runs before doubles. Five walks, eight strikeouts in 47 plate appearances. So Andrew Vaughn really is starting to look like the guy we hoped he would be coming into the season, which is, if you ask me, a very good thing. And I think he's under-rostered, even without the good matchups this week. I think he should be more rostered than he has been.
You know, you want to go back even further?
Mm-hmm.
This is the number I like to cite for Andrew Vaughn, and I'm sure you won't like it because it's an arbitrary.
No, it's that May 23rd date, right?
I was actually going to say June 15th.
Ah, okay. Yeah, May 23rd is my arbitrary endpoint for Andrew Vaughn, but June 15th works too.
Yeah, since June 15th, he's batting .319 with seven homers and a .917 OPS.
So. Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good. All right, so the rest of the best hitter matchups, you mentioned the Brewers, the Athletics, three at Cleveland, at Texas, the White Sox, three at Minnesota, three versus the Yankees, Red Sox, three versus Tampa, three versus Baltimore, Cardinals, three at Pittsburgh, three at Kansas City. The worst hitter matchups, do any teams play only five games this week? The Astros do.
Yeah, they're the only one.
So they have the fifth worst matchups. They get two at home against Colorado, three on the road against the Angels. Phillies have the worst, three against the Dodgers, three against the Reds. Diamondbacks at San Francisco for two, four versus San Diego. Rockies at Houston for two, at San Francisco for four, so they get the negative park shift. And the Nationals at the Mets for three versus the Braves for three. So there you have it. The Week 20 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Line and Kugels. And got to be honest, this week, hosting the podcast, writing the Fantasy Football Today newsletter, go to cbssports.com/newsletters to sign up now, and doing some other writing, I'm pretty exhausted. I'm running pretty low on resources here at the end of the week. But tomorrow, I think everyone agrees. Tomorrow, I am going to really enjoy my day off. I'm going to lounge on the roof deck, try to get a tan. Summer's almost over. I need to, you know, make sure I got a nice base coat going into the winter. And I will be grabbing a handful of Line and Kugel's summer shandies beforehand. It's the perfect blend of crisp lemonade and refreshing beer. Perfect for a hot summer's day. Summer Shandy isn't all they offer. They also have a Session Helles, which has all the flavor of a crisp German-style beer, but it's only 99 calories, and I can tell you, the low-calorie beers, it's a game-changer, folks. I'm a big fan. And if you're into IPAs, Line and Kugel's has their Lemon Haze IPA. It's a well-balanced, hazy IPA that blends hops with the flavor of delicious lemonade. So no matter what type of beverage you're craving, Line and Kugel's has you covered. Just head on over to liney.com. That's LEINIE.com, or follow Line and Kugel's on Instagram or Facebook for more information about all the delicious beers that they brew. You know what I just realized, Scott?
What?
Oh my goodness. We didn't do Oh My Goodness Gracious. So let's bring it in halfway through the show, maybe a little more, three quarters of the way through the show. No, it's going to be a 90-minute show, Scott. I forgot to tell you.
You were saying before we went on, you thought it'd be only 50 minutes.
Yeah, so, I mean, we could wrap it up right now. So my oh my goodness gracious player, we talked about him a little earlier in this week, but just want to highlight how ridiculously hot Dansby Swanson has been. He went 2-for-4 with 2 doubles on Thursday. Over his last 24 games, arbitrary endpoints are arbitrary, whatever. It's 24 games. That's an even number. It's fine. He's hitting 347 with a 663 slug. He's got 7 home runs and 10 doubles. He has been on a 50-homer pace and a 20-steal pace in that span. I believe he also has 3 steals with no caught stealings. Is this just a hot streak for Dansby Swanson, or do you think maybe he's figuring something out? Remember, you know, heading into last season especially, Dansby Swanson was a very popular breakout candidate. It didn't quite happen, but he has his first 20-homer season. It was fine. It was 809 OPS. He wasn't amazing. He was fine. It was his best season, but it wasn't an incredible season.
He was a must-start fantasy player.
Sure.
He's never going to be like a top 5 shortstop. He's never going to be like a top 5 round pick, probably. But he's a good player. He's a good player. It's a good fallback option at shortstop.
Borderline top 12?
The studs.
Borderline top 12 right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
What about you? Who's your oh my goodness gracious player for the night? Have we already talked about them?
We've mentioned his name. I would say Daniel Lynch is my oh my goodness gracious player of the night.
Yeah.
Daniel Lynch has had nothing but good starts since coming back from the minors. This is his third straight. Allowed 1 earned run in 5 innings, struck out 7. But the stat that stood out, what do you think it is, considering I'm bringing it up, is
X-Fit.
Swinging strikes.
Ah.
Ah, that's the other one, yeah. Good call. But no, in this case, it's swinging strikes. He had 17 of them, did Daniel Lynch, including 12 on the slider, which he threw more than any other pitch. That was, I should double check this, but I'm pretty sure he'd been leading with his fastball. Like, that'd been his, like most pitchers, his most thrown pitch. But he used the slider a lot in this one against the White Sox, so not, you know, not a cupcake matchup by any means. And Lynch, you know, the previous two starts were good, but this is the first time we've really he's really shown like bat missing ability, which he was presumed to have.
Yeah, remember he was when he got called up earlier this season, he was kind of the first exciting pitcher. I feel like he got called up like in a week or two into the season.
He got called up, I believe, before the minor league season started.
Yeah,
which it was delayed until May, but still. Yeah. Yeah,
and he was a top 25 prospect coming into the season for at least Baseball America. I'm not sure about the other publications, but he was a highly regarded prospect.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was pretty lukewarm on him after those first two starts back. This start, you know, I wouldn't say I'm on fire for him necessarily, but I'm intrigued. He seems to be trending the right direction. Daniel Lynch.
Your eyes are open, I think we can say. All right, let's talk about some of the other pitchers and, you know, like we said at the top of the show, not necessarily the best crop, but there were some interesting performances. And, you know, I would like to get your thoughts, Scott, first off on Tuki Toussaint, who went 5 1/3, 5 hits, 2 runs. So not a bad start. 2 walks, only 3 strikeouts. That's the bummer for Tuki Toussaint. What do you see out there from him?
It wasn't a great start. I think it was a good enough start to hold on to him a little longer, though. Mm-hmm. He bought himself another turn on my fantasy teams with this start because he got shelled last time. Previous two starts were great. Mm-hmm. So 3 out of 4 now have been
good enough,
on the right side of the ledger. So I'll give him another shot. I'm not, you know, he if there's somebody amazing out there that you like, if you have to pick up John Gray and you have Tuki Toussaint, okay, drop Tuki Toussaint for John Gray. But in most scenarios, just looking at the roster rates of all the pitchers out there, I'd stick with Toussaint for another turn. See how that one goes.
Well, let's compare him to 2 other pitchers who started today and see who you'd rather have. Would you rather have Tuki Toussaint or would you rather have Joe Ross, who went 6 1/3? 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, 3 earned runs against the Phillies.
Yeah, I mean, even when Toussaint was in the middle of having those two good starts, I was saying Ross just because the consistency of his season. But he has been one of the most baffling pitchers this year because I don't really know what makes him good. And it's worth pointing out, his ERA is over 4, but it's just
right.
The percentage of bad starts has been really low. They've just been really, really bad.
Yeah, he's given up 18 of his 43 earned runs in 2 starts. He had another with 5, another with 4, another with 5, and 2 more with 4. Mm-hmm. 3 earned runs or fewer in every other start.
And maybe it's better to look at the overall numbers than that game by game breakdown.
Yeah,
to get a idea who a pitcher is. That's probably a better way to do it, but
I will say
the process of setting your lineup every week makes it, you know, makes me want to use Ross because obviously he keeps delivering.
Yeah, quality starts in 6 out of his last 9. One of those other starts was a 5 shutout inning start, I believe, his first game back from the IL, so he only threw 72 pitches. He's got 60 strikeouts in 54 and 2/3 innings over his last 9. So he is averaging 6 innings per start in that stretch. He's gone at least 6 and I believe 7 of 9, actually. Nope, 6 of 9 as well. So just as many as he's got quality starts. So, yeah, he has been really consistent lately and more than a strikeout per 9. So, yeah, I think Joe Ross is pretty good. What about Tuki Toussaint or Tristan McKenzie, who went 7 innings, gave up 3 earned runs, no walks, only 4 strikeouts. But I did note his average fastball velocity was up to 93.3 miles per hour, which is a good sign for Tristan McKenzie because he's someone who we saw last season looked really good to start out, and then his velocity really faded. But he seems to be actually gaining this season, which is, I think, a good sign for a very talented pitcher.
Yeah. I think I'd prefer Toussaint, but it's not based on much. I mean, basically, McKenzie's had 2 awful starts since coming back, and Toussaint has had just 1. That's what I'm basing it on. I think they're both of a talent level where they could just blow up. Yeah, blow up in a good way. I mean, yes. Take off, I guess, is the better phrase to use. But it's not clear that it's happening for either. So I'd side a little more with Toussaint, but, you know, I could understand the argument for going McKenzie instead.
All right. Is there anything here with Merrill Kelly, who went 8 shutout versus the Giants, 4 strikeouts, 2 walks? Anything there?
I mean, it's kind of Joe Ross-y in that he keeps delivering, but I'm not really sure why. 2.44 ERA now over his last 9 starts for Merrill Kelly. Pitching very consistently deep into games. He's done it those last 9 starts in spite of a low K rate, in spite of a low ground ball rate. And his xFIP for the year is over 4. I mean, his ERA for the year is over 4, too.
Yeah.
So they actually match up pretty well. I don't really trust it. I could see Merrill Kelly as a streamer type, but nothing more.
Like I said, not exactly an embarrassment of riches on the pitching crop today. What about Nestor Cortez for the Yankees? He went 5 innings, 2 earned runs against Seattle. He has a 2.15 ERA. On the season, much of that was in relief, but he's been pretty good since being moved to the rotation. You know, 4 starts, only 13 strikeouts and 18 innings in those 4 starts, though. Does Nestor Cortez have any value outside of a 15-team league?
I don't think so.
Maybe as a SPARP. If he gets a 2-start week,
right? I mean, I could see him as a matchups play. I could see him winding up on my sleeper pitchers list one of these weeks, just because I got to fill it out with a certain number of bad pitchers.
He's active,
but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because obviously Nestor Cortez got the first shot of the two, but Luis Gil if he sticks around once Cole and Montgomery are back, or if he gets sent down and Cortez keeps the job. Because I'd rather at this point, you know, for my own selfish reasons, Luis Gil, see what he has, what he can offer. I think he's certainly more talented than Cortez. So that's it. That's where I am.
All right. And I'll just throw out Tarik Skubal. 5 shutout innings, 4 starts, 4 strikeouts, 1 walk against Boston. Did give up 9 hard hit balls. He has failed to go 6 innings in 4 of his last 6 starts, but you know, it was nice to see him, you know, kind of turn his slide around. The strikeout rate has fallen lately. He's got 27 strikeouts over his last 6 starts. That's in a stretch of 32 innings. So, you know, you'd like to see more from Tarik Skubal. Let's get to the bullpen. Were there any other pitchers? I guess one we'll need to mention, Spencer Howard, 2 1/3, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. We'll see what he can develop into, but
yeah,
clearly not there yet.
I do want to mention a few pitchers.
Go ahead and mention them.
Actually, if I may mention a few quickly. Dylan Bundy had a good start.
Yeah.
No earned runs in 6 1/3 innings, struck out 6.
Average like 90 miles per hour. Average 90 miles per hour with his fastball.
Yeah, the velocity was down. It was his first good start since April. I'm not buying back into Dylan Bundy based on this start. I feel like it needs to be said.
Yeah, sure.
Alex Wood had a bad start, 4 earned runs in 4 innings, 10 base runners allowed in those 4 innings. 4 earned runs last time, too.
Yeah.
But a good 5-star stretch before that. I mean, there have been a lot of ups and downs, but still a 3.69 xFIP, still a good ground ball rate with more than a strikeout per inning.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's decent. Obviously, more of a matchups play than a must start guy, and more valuable in points leagues because of the relief pitcher eligibility. But. You know, that's as far as I'd go with him. And Braxton Garrett had a curiously dominant start again. Dominant because he got 15 swinging strikes.
Mm-hmm.
No earned runs in 5 innings. That's good, obviously. 4 walks, 5 hits, so a lot of base runners. But 15 swinging strikes after his previous turn in the majors. Remember, he had 10 strikeouts in 7 innings.
Mm-hmm.
He had a bad minor league start in between those 2 starts. So I'm still not buying into Braxton Garrett, but it was interesting for the second straight major league start with a bad minor league start in between. We can say he at least stood out.
Yeah, did he get a lot of whiffs on the slider today?
It was actually well distributed between 5 different pitches. I think The most he had on any one of those 5 pitches was 4 whiffs.
Yep. He had 4 whiffs on the 4 seamer and 4 on the sinker. So 8 on the slider, I guess, or fastball, I guess. I don't know if the stuff is there. So he'll have to be, you know, a pretty good command pitcher and, you know, 4 walks.
4 walks in 5 innings. Yeah.
isn't much hope for, or much reason for optimism. Let's move on to some bullpen notes. Anthony Bender did get his second save of the season for the Marlins. I don't know if Dylan Flora was available, but it wasn't exactly a great outing for Bender. He gave up one unearned run, a hit and a walk, 1 strikeout in his inning against the Mets. So
Flora had worked 3 of the previous 4 days, so I just suspect he wasn't available.
Yeah, that makes sense. Jake McGee got a save. Tyler Clippard, poor guy, got a save opportunity, blew it. He came in a tough situation, but he hit a batter, gave up 2 singles to allow 2 inherited runners to score to blow the save. Archie Bradley got the save for the Phillies, gave up 1 unearned run. Jose Alvarado pitched in the 7th and was not good. 3 hits, 1 walk in that inning. So I don't know. I mean, Ian Kennedy,
he had also worked 3 the previous 4 days, though. Yeah. Yesterday he only threw 2 pitches.
Yeah,
I assume it was a day off, but it is kind of funny that
it's surprising.
Since they acquired him, he has no saves, and 2 other pitchers in that bullpen have a save.
Yeah. Aroldis Chapman got the save for the Yankees. He's been excellent since the All-Star break. 16 strikeouts in 10 innings. 7 straight saves successful. Adam Simber got the save for the Blue Jays versus Cleveland, but presumably Jordan Romano was just getting a day off.
Daniel Bard 2 or 3.
What's that?
He had worked 2 or 3.
Yep.
Though it is notable that Hand was well rested. Brad Hand was well rested, and they went with Adam Simber instead.
Yeah, I don't know. Has Hand really hasn't pitched much since getting to the Blue Jays, has he?
I think only 2 appearances.
Yeah. Jacob Brent's got a save for the Royals. Think there's anything there?
I mean, Holland and Barlow both worked.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been the guys most recently we thought were the front runners there. But, like, I really don't think it matters. It's like the Orioles bullpen.
All right. Kyle Finnegan blew the save, gave up 3 hits, 4 unearned runs with 1K. But, like, it was one of those ones where it was, like, I think the first out of the inning or the second out of the inning was a throwing error. And then he got hit. So I don't think you can really look at the 4 unearned runs and say, well, he pitched well. He didn't. And obviously not someone that we think has a ton of job security. So if you were speculating for the Washington bullpen, who would you look to?
Oh, gosh.
Nobody.
We talked about it yesterday. My backup in my bullpen report
got sent down.
Next in the pecking order is a guy in the minor leagues right now, Tanner Rainey. So,
yeah.
Look, I don't think Finnegan loses his job based on this one outing, but I agree he's not. Certainly not a closer caliber reliever, but they just don't have anyone else.
Sure. Alex Colomé got a 1-out save. And then there was something really, really curious that I want to keep an eye on over the weekend. Alex Reyes came on in the 7th inning, I believe. No, the 8th inning. With 2 outs, 1 on with a game-tied 4-4 after Giovanni Gallegos gave up a home run. His line went hit by pitch. Walk. Walk that scored a run. Walk that scored a run. Walk that scored a run before being pulled from the game. That is a very, very, very bad outing for Alex Reyes, even accounting for the fact that he walks a lot of guys. So, you know, I guess they were looking for a 4-out save there. They certainly didn't get that. That kind of blew the game open for the Braves. Hopefully there's nothing there. Hopefully it was just a random bad outing that looked especially bad.
He walks so many guys, so many. Like, people were flipping out before the season how many guys James Karinchak walks, and it's child's play compared to what Alex Reyes does. So I kind of feel like he's been getting away with it all year.
The thing is, Karinchak gets hit hard, and Reyes doesn't. Reyes has a 311 xWOB on contact allowed, so that's one key difference with them.
I want you didn't mention, though, in the bullpen here, Michael Givens got a save for the Reds.
I did.
Very conventional one-inning save with a 3-run lead. Michael Lorenzen got a save, I believe it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. But it was a 5-out save.
And we're thinking, oh, okay, maybe he's the front runner because he hasn't failed yet. Well, Givens was recently acquired. He hasn't failed yet in the role for the Reds. And he has, you know, having spent most of this year in Colorado, he has a 2.34 ERA on the year. So maybe it'll be Givens. Not willing to say it after one save, especially the way David Bell's managed that bullpen all year, but I think Givens is at least somebody you got to think about.
Such are the meager joys in the Cincinnati bullpen that he hasn't failed yet is a vote of confidence. And I'll just throw out a couple of hitter things before we go. Jared Kelenic hit a Yankee Stadium home run today. So, you know, it's good to see him get one on the board, but it was a cheapie. Joey Votto and Jonathan India both homered. They've remained red hot. Kyle Farmer also went 3-for-4. He's remained red hot. There's a little pun for you. Trevor Story hit 2 home runs versus the Cubs. Hope you tried to trade for him like we told you to on Tuesday. Chris Bryant went 3-for-5 with 2 doubles. Josh Bell, 3-for-5, 3-run home run in this one. He's hitting .278 with 35 homers and 115 RBI pace since May 1st. He's only got like an 840 OPS, but he's been pretty good after outside of the very, very, very bad, no good, rotten, horrible start to the season.
So. Yeah, you're saying pace in terms of you're presuming a certain number of games.
Yeah, that's 162 game pace.
Okay. Yeah, because the big problem that I've seen with Bell, and when, you know, he has performed well since April, mm-hmm. but they still sit him. It's been less lately, but still more than you'd like.
Yeah.
For Ryan Zimmerman. So that's annoying.
And then one last one. I'm sorry. I'm trying to look something
Jonathan up. India? Is that the one?
I did mention yep. him already. No, Hoy Park for the Pirates. Oh. He led off. I believe he's led off twice for them since they acquired him. He went 2-for-4 with a run, a walk, a strikeout. Had a very, very good minor league season. We've mentioned him a handful of times. I'm sure when Frank gets back, he'll lament that the Yankees traded him because he's been decent for the Pirates. But he's interesting just because he does have good plate discipline and stolen base potential. So I can see him having a good close to the season. That is Hoy Park for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And that is it for the Chris Towers-hosted week of Fantasy Baseball Today. Frank Stampfl will be back on Sunday. And I hope, you know, he doesn't, I don't think he's been listening. He messaged, texted me like, hey, how's the pods been going so far? And I was like, I don't know, fine, I guess. Not that many people have complained. I hope he doesn't get back and be like, oh my God, you broke everything. So...
he will. That sounds so much like Frank.
That's true. He's a very high-strung person. We'll see you on Sunday, Monday when you listen, if you don't watch the show on YouTube. And we'll be back then. See you later. Bye.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.